the Grahamian Report. The unusual, weird news, anomalies, exopolitics. It's Beyond the Fringe, where conspiracy theory can become conspiracy fact. This is the Grahamian Report with your host, Micah Hanks.
McCoy is right in pointing out the enormous danger potential in any contact with life and intelligence as fantastically advanced as this. But I must point out that the possibilities, the potential for knowledge and advancement is equally great. Risk. Risk is our business. That's what the starship is all about. That's why we're aboard her.
And from hundreds of miles beneath terra firma in the depths of the hollow earth, live from the Grahamian bunker, welcome, my friends. It is a special edition of the Grahamian Report. I'm your host, Micah Hanks, joined in studio, as always, by a fine and formidable in-studio staff. Caleb Hanks, good evening, my friend. How are we?
This is my boomstick!
That's right. He's not dead, but he's evil. And, of course, Mr. Tyler Pittman, the Dark Cardinal himself. Tyler, there should be flowers. Welcome.
Evening.
Good evening, and good evening to all of you, our friends, the Grahamian gang out there on the Internet. So glad that you are here with us. We wish we were in Washington tonight. In fact, there's incredible news breaking out of Washington, D.C., the nation's capital. That's right, the citizens' hearing on official disclosure. We'll be talking more about that tonight. In addition to a lot of extraterrestrial-themed subjects, this is something of a point of contention here on this program, as most listeners of the Grahamian Report know. Yeah, I'm not exactly an E.T. guy. But, of course, I am certainly a UFO guy. And so why are we going to be talking about extraterrestrials tonight? Well, because there is such contentious debate going on about whether or not our government is hiding information about extraterrestrial presences from us here on terra firma, or even for those of us down here hundreds of miles beneath terra firma, like we are in the Grahamian bunker. But before we get to that, it is with a bit of sadness that I opened the show this week in memoriam of a gentleman who was a friend of the program. He is also a personal friend of mine. He was a former guest on this program. I had the pleasure of meeting him I guess it was November in Pennsylvania, and talking with him. His name was Thomas Stryker. He was a doctor, and he was also a humanitarian, but perhaps best known to our audience as the author of a book that dealt with extraplanetary experiences. Now, members of Nevada Council County's homeless community and its supporters are recently mourning the loss of this advocate, Thomas Stryker. He died in a wreck in Wyoming on his way back to feed Nevada City's needy after a trip to South Dakota's Pine Ridge Indian Reservation. This happened late last month. Our good friend Ronnie Anderson only recently brought this to our attention here at the program. "It's very shocking," said Cheryl Zellers, a former board member of Divine Spark, which was Stryker's charitable nonprofit organization. "I'm still in the mode where I don't believe it." Now, returning from his 42nd charitable trip to the reservation, Stryker, he was 58 years old, and apparently he hit ice as he was traveling along. He had not been wearing a seatbelt, and he was thrown from the vehicle as he traveled along. It was absolutely tragic. He apparently was pronounced dead on the way to the hospital. He was born in 1955 in Milwaukee. He served in the U.S. Marine Corps. on active duty starting in 1973, according to his website. He garnered 4 meritorious promotions up the rank of sergeant by the time of his honorable discharge in 1975. By 1984, Stryker had earned his associate's degree in business management. In 1999, he earned a bachelor's degree in psychology from California State University in Sacramento, followed by a master's degree in transpersonal psychology at the Institute for Transpersonal Psychology in Palo Alto. He also obtained a Ph.D. in psychology at Saybrook University in San Francisco. But he was, in addition to being an environmental activist and a supporter of addiction recovery, he was also, of course, a father of 3 adult daughters and an avid traveler. But he was perhaps best known to our audience as a internationally renowned author. Of course, he wrote a book about interplanetary experiences. He actually called them extraplanetary experiences, in which he interviewed a number of different people, including former NASA astronaut Dr. Edgar Mitchell. It's certainly with sadness that we hear about his passing here at the Graylian Report, because in addition to being a wonderful human being, like I'd mentioned, I met Thomas Stryker back in November. And he was formerly, of course, a frequent guest on podcasts, including this one. And hence, in remembering Thomas Stryker at the outset of tonight's program, we have a bit of audio from his appearance here on the Graylian Report from 2012.
Extraplanetary experience is basically just a reported experience by an individual claiming that they have visited another planet, star system, or moon. And this experience could have been an out-of-body experience also. So it opens up to a large realm. What I'm trying to do is gather information about what these planets are like, what they see. But the basic crux of my study is how this type of experience has affected the person. What I found out was that it was a tremendous change of life, Dr. Edgar Mitchell, the astronaut. Edgar is over 80 years old now, and he's still unraveling that experience of what that was like of going to, you know, we're not going to consider a moon a planet, but pretty darn close, you know, another celestial body out there. Mm-hmm. Got out of a spacecraft, walked down there, came back. He's still unraveling that, the mystery behind it all. But, you know, the real important part of this, and to answer your question, is the changes that took place in these people from their experience. When I was at the Institute of Transpersonal Psychology in Palo Alto trying to obtain my doctorate degree there, I was enrolled in a Ph.D. Dissertation phase. So I had to write a dissertation, and basically they were not going to accept my topic, and my topic at the time was just what the book is about now, you know, people that go to other planets, unless I had an expert. I said to the school, I said, well, who do you consider an expert? And they said, well, if you can get Dr. John Mack on your side, we'll let you do the dissertation here. So I didn't know all that much about, you know, Dr. Mack at the time. I knew he had 2 books out, Alien Abduction and Passport to the Cosmos, but I never thought I'd be able to work with him. But anyway, to make a long story short, I tried for months working through his secretary. Her name was Pat Carr. Finally, after a couple of months, the secretary called and said, okay, John Mack, going to call you tonight at your house at about 7 o'clock. Be there, and you can discuss this with him. So he did call me, and it was like a kindling, you know. It was like we really resonated with each other, and he said, yep, I'll do it. I'll send the paperwork in tomorrow. So there it was. That was the start of it. And we worked together for about 6 months, unfortunately. He was hit and killed by a drunk driver in London. Yeah. That ended it all. That ended my dissertation at the school also. So I had to find another school to finish that dissertation, which was unfortunate. But my work with John was incredible. I mean, he was just one of those kind of guys, you know. He was an anomalous person himself, you know, an anomaly, because he just had an extraordinary way of looking at things. And, you know, besides his professional background, you know, as being a psychiatrist, you know, once you got on another level with him and you start talking about his witnessing technique that he used, you know, with his experiencers and really trying to begin a more discussion with experiencers. He would always call people experiencers, and he would use this term witnessing. Now, that what it came down to, there were some key ingredients to witnessing, and a lot of it was about resonance, sympathetic resonance, really getting into the heart and soul of this person that's giving you this story, you know, and seeing how it affects the listener. And so you really tune in like a tuning fork to your to your listener to see what's there. And a lot of times, you know, it strikes the right note and you're on your way to really great possibilities with that experiencer, because that experiencer can start, you know, really understanding their own experience a little bit deeper because of a more relaxed kind of atmosphere, and it's going to let the tension and fear and stress go. The other part of John that a lot of people don't know is, like, so, you know, he wrote the book on, you know, alien abductions. Now, that's got a lot of people scared of, I want to call them aliens, or, you know, extraterrestrials would be another word, and that's, you know, the alien abduction phenomenon is a whole nother phenomenon. I want, you know, the audience to be clear about that. You know, none of the people that I interviewed in my book had an alien abduction experience. These were people that were invited, or they had a relationship with extraterrestrials. So it's a little bit different there. So, you know, talking about the alien abduction phenomenon would be a whole, you know, a couple hours in itself. I think that the similarities about the extraplanetary experience, let's say if we're going to compare it to the alien abduction experience, I'm just going to make this kind of short about that, is that a lot of people that report alien abduction experiences through proper assimilation, I use that word a lot, just it's a process people go through. It takes years and years to process an event like that, especially a traumatic event. So through assimilation, a lot of those people that initially reported an alien abduction experience end up changing their mind that it wasn't taken by force after they had time to process it all. Hmm. It was like, okay, I was really scared, I was traumatized, and I really wasn't thinking like how I'm thinking now. As they look at it retrospectively, a lot of these experiencers that thought they had an alien abduction experience through years of assimilation came back and said, that was an incredible teaching I just had. I never looked at it like that before, you know. And so it's like having a Zen master or somebody really intelligent, you know, an upper intelligence, just maybe being a little bit more, more assertive, sometimes even aggressive, on how they teach. So the peak experience for, like, Dr. Edgar Mitchell, who is also the founder of the Noetic Sciences out in the San Francisco Bay Area, he's really saying that he doesn't have all the answers. It's a mystery that continues, and he just figures it's going to continue on for, he doesn't really know how long it's going to, if it ever is going to be answered in this lifetime or maybe another lifetime. It's just something that, you know, that's all part of that assimilation process, how he's processing it, new information coming in about the experience and how it's helping him understand it at a higher conscious level. Because, of course, we all change daily. You know, if we're aware of our changes, you know, our consciousness, we're taking on more consciousness, you know, every day. If we're available for it, it's there. You know, more expanded consciousness. And when you talk with Dr. Mitchell, even to this day, he's that kind of guy, because he's always trying to learn new things. And you can tell when you talk with him that his consciousness just keeps expanding, because he's taking in the information, still new information that's coming in about the cosmos now and the possibility of there being other inhabited planets out there. You know, he's observing all this, taking it in, and when you do that, the consciousness keeps expanding at the same time. So you got all these, you know, a wider spectrum of consciousness going on, and it's hard to grasp it all at one time, but for these people that have had the extraplanetary experience, it's nonstop. I can just tell you, these people, all my experiences were over 50 years old. They've had experiences of this kind for 30, 40 years. So they had a lot of time to process, or the other word is assimilate, these experiences. And like I said, it doesn't stop. It just continues and gets more and more profound.
And with that, we're out to break. Thomas Stryker, he was a wonderful man, a humanitarian, a researcher of the unexplained, and of course he will continue his work, no doubt, on the other side. He'll be sorely missed by those of us here in this dimensional plane for his good work and his humanitarian efforts. When we come back, news from our listeners here on the Graylian Report. I'm Micah Hanks. Stay tuned. The weird, the unusual, the outback. Andrew Nicholson's latest, Weird Australia. Real reports, uncanny creatures, strange sightings, extraordinary encounters. Weird Australia, the latest from researcher Andrew Nicholson. For more information, visit WeirdAustralia.com. Back to the program. I'm Micah Hanks, and this is the Graylian Report. Remembering Thomas Stryker, PhD, this evening, among other things, we'll be talking about the citizens' hearing on disclosure. And I'll put this out to the folks in the chat room, as well as those of you out there in the blog sphere, the podcasters who are listening to this program on demand, anywhere online, around the world on the internet. Do you think that our world governments are hiding information about extraterrestrial technology from us? And if so, will that ever be disclosed to the general public? I have personal doubts about that myself. I'm Micah Hanks, and this is the Graylian Report. We're keeping you company every Tuesday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time here in the continental United States. I do want to get to just a couple of listener emails before we start discussing the disclosure issue. We've got a lot of stuff to cover and a very short time to do that during which. Ninja writes, George Norrie says east of the Rockies and west of the Rockies. Well, if you call from Colorado, does he say in the Rockies? Good question. Well, Micah, he writes, you should start saying east of the Appalachians and west of the Appalachians. That's very good. Thank you for that. And by the way, in the meantime, if you're listening to this program right now and you'd like to join us on the program, we will open the phone lines shortly. And you can reach us at 828-398-4886 anywhere east or west of the Appalachians. Skype users can reach the program by contacting us at Skype ID, Graylian Report, and emails can be received at info@graylianreport.com. If you'd prefer just to send us a text message, that seems to be the popular way of communicating amidst our youth today. That number is as follows, 828-367-7201. And if you'd like all of that information before your ever-loving eyes, you can just visit graylianreport.com/podcast-and-radio. You'll see podcast and radio on the right-hand side of the screen at the top there on the Graylian Report main site. And you can just click that link. All the information's there for you. Who knows? East of the Appalachians, or maybe perhaps since there's a lot more territory to the west. Those of you west of the Appalachians will hear from you tonight. Steve writes, gentlemen, I was so relieved to hear a podcast putting their shoulder into the bloated torso of Alex Jones and pushing. It is times like this that you want to grab Jones by his pie-sized face and scream, not everything is a conspiracy. Now, don't get me wrong, there are conspiracies, and at this point it is hard to doubt it, but Jones is doing nothing more than, well, drawing the kind of attention that no one wants. Whether it's purposeful or not in anyone's, or rather whether it is purposeful is not anyone's guess. I don't think that there's anyone since the heyday of Paratopia who has had the cojones to be as critical of anyone in or out of the esoteric else for fear of retaliation of some kind, and hence rock on, gentlemen. In other words, he's coming to our our aid on that. You know, I don't want to evoke the wrath of Alex Jones, but again, I think in relation to his treatment of the Boston Massacre, it was a bit sensational. By the same token, I was telling Caleb before the program earlier today, I think Alex Jones says a lot of smart stuff. I think he's probably one of the He's probably one of the most well-informed individuals out there. It's the way he treats the information that he has access to that I think at times is worth taking issue with. But few would dispute the fact that Alex Jones is an intelligent individual, that I think his heart is probably in the right place in terms of the way that he goes about trying to warn people of what he thinks is an oncoming global catastrophe.
The right place to sell survival seed vault and Big Berkey water filters.
That's right. Jumping ahead in Steve's correspondence, he says, also happy to hear someone calling Greer, Stephen Greer, out on the carpet. I can't and never will take someone seriously who claims to be able to vector in a UFO by wielding the mighty flashlight.
Wait, did you smear Greer?
We've engaged in a bit of Greer smearing, but let's look at the facts. Stephen Greer is a man. By the way, anyone here seen Sirius?
Seriously. I have not yet.
Seriously. It's streaming online for about $10 per view. As a matter of fact, I think our sister site...
$10?
Yeah, for $10, you too can watch the Sirius documentary. Now, our friends, the sister site of this program, MysteriousUniverse.org, also has that available streaming on their website just as well. You still have to pay for it. But Stephen Greer has been a mouthpiece for disclosure. We'll be talking a bit about Stephen Greer. He's one of two Steves we'll be talking about in relation to UFO disclosure this evening. But Stephen Greer is also a person who I think, come on. He goes out in the woods. Yes, they use flashlights and they sing Kumbaya or whatever it is they do. They meditate and they claim that they bring UFOs in using CE5 technology. This is a terminology that Greer has himself coined in relation to basically meditating and putting forth your conscious intent to draw aliens in telepathically. He believes that this is how we will make contact with aliens. Now, for all I know, maybe that is how we will make contact with aliens. If anything, those who study the esoteric know that this is just as likely as anything else. But by the same token, when you pair that with trying to be a serious leading political advocate for disclosure, I think that that only does one thing. It doesn't put you in direct contact with UFOs so much as it diminishes your overall credibility. And so Steve is something of an interesting character. He's someone who's willing to be out there and be politically active, and yet he doesn't seem to worry very much about his public persona and how seriously people take him in a political sense in America today.
Well, by politically active, you mean dropping lots of money to get politicians to speak at an event?
Well, you know, I don't know. I think he would probably do something along those lines. Steve also writes, not Steve Greer, but Steve who wrote Us, says that, sorry, Dr. Greer, but as they say in my neck of the woods, that dog just won't hunt. Good luck passing off your couch cushion find as an alien, referencing something Caleb said last week. The Graylian Report has been an excellent addition to my daily commute and podcasts. Keep up the great work. Thanks, Steve. Moving right along, Betty June writes, hi, Micah. I enjoyed last week's podcast, and I especially liked your assessment of Alex Jones and his conspiracy theories. And with that in mind, I have a story about conspiracy theories I'd like to share just as well. Now, last night, one of our neighborhood club meetings featured the second hour of a two-hour film by Jones, something having to do with the New World Order. When the group started, the leader announced that this would be his last meeting. Why? Well, because his experience was that he had done so much research on the New World Order and things going on in the movement known as Thrive, also based on a popular documentary that features Stephen Greer, I believe, that he could no longer healthily continue. He talked about his questioning and how he no longer wanted to be associated with religion. He was scared and he was angry, and he now wants to concentrate on love and spirituality, another club that he leads that has to do with spirituality. He said that the co-leader of this group would handle these sorts of things better than he could. Well, we watched the second half of this Alex Jones film. The movie disturbed a lot of people. Many expressed their interest in what could be done to stop the New World Order. The co-leader said that that was another meeting, and the original host got up in near hysterics at that point and almost tearfully spoke on some of the issues in the film. Well, I thought it was synchronistic that your broadcast was about this very topic of conspiracy theories. Alex Jones really has no business scaring people with his fear-mongering, and some people take these things to heart, and all his rhetoric has a tendency to disturb many individuals. I know it's not just Alex Jones. There are others just as well. Have a good day, Betty June. I agree. And again, while I think that Alex Jones has an incredible potential and an incredible ability to attain knowledge and to retain knowledge for that matter, again, the way that he delivers it to the public is at times sometimes just sensational. And finally, Jay Van Harlinger writes, hey, Micah and the gang, first of all, love the show. I started listening the day after the world ended. I was more than eager to go on with the insightful ideas, or rather to go out into history. with insightful ideas from the Bunker Gang and the Australian blokes from Down Under. He's referring, of course, to the simulcast between Graylian Report and Mysterious Universe that took place on the 21st of December last year. Well, anyhow, recently on YouTube, I came across some videos about the Bosnian Pyramid. I don't know if you mentioning anything about this and its discovery is taking place on the program, but I'd love to hear your opinion on the subject and its potential impact in academia. Thanks and keep up the good work. You know, I haven't seen anything about this Bosnian Pyramid. In fact, I know very little about it. Do either of you gentlemen here in the studio with me know anything about a Bosnian Pyramid being unearthed?
Haven't heard a thing.
I feel like I've heard something that the late Philip Coppens was talking about shortly before, within a few months before his death. And this thing's been, if I'm not mistaken, maybe 2009, if not 06, and they didn't really know what to believe, but it seems like more and more evidence is supporting the idea that this is a actual construction of a pyramid type object. So,
you know, actually it's funny,
it's gaining steam from what I heard. It seems as if academia is taking a more serious look at it, but at the same time keeping those that are interested in the realm of the late Coppens kind of at bay while they go about their initial assessment.
Well, I do seem to, now that you mentioned that, Tyler, remember Philip mentioning something about that. I don't, again, know exactly what our listeners are writing about. We'll have to look into that. I do know this, though, that Philip often said in life that the skeptics called him a believer and the believers called him a skeptic. And so, personally, I found Philip to be often, although he was a frequent star on the Ancient Aliens program, he was more skeptical about things. He didn't buy into you know, channeling and a lot of the modern interpretations of Atlantis. You know, he put forth a different theory that it was actually an ancient megalithic site in Europe, and that the legends of Atlantis had been derived from that location. So I think it's very interesting, and his perspectives on things were always incredible. He, too, joined us on the program. It's just such a shame, and I have to say this, too, wrapping up our letters section of the program tonight, you know, remembering Thomas Stryker tonight, and we mentioned Philip Coppens, you know, just in the last 6 months, we've lost two fantastic researchers, and you know, I'm so blessed to know that those individuals brought their knowledge and their intelligence to this program in the past to help us you know, unravel the secrets and understand our reality in a slightly different way. Now, that said, of course, we're moving on to the hot topic of the evening, which has to do with, well, what some are calling space cadets in Washington, D.C. That's right. UFO buffs have landed on the nation's capital. The New York Daily News carried this story yesterday. On Monday, six former members of Congress who were paid $20,000 each. I'm sorry, gentlemen. I think once I finish screaming, and once the words stop flying out of my mouth and the blood stops shooting out of my eyes here, we'll go ahead and continue with this story. Anyhow, for several $20,000, they had to pay these people to be there? What? Anyway, moving.
That's a lot of scratch.
Let's find out what's controlling that droid Mitch McConnell. Well, I can't get it out correctly.
Anyway, I don't mean to be critical from the outset, but okay, so there's a citizens' hearing on disclosure. I should finish this story and then we'll talk about it. God. Anywho.
That was my point before you start. Citizens meeting, right? Yeah.
Uh-huh.
With $20,000.
Said something about somebody being paid, so you knew.
Well,
okay.
Well, I'm just basically saying, as a citizen, it doesn't seem really attainable to someone who even has an interest in the field to go up to D.C. to sit at these hearings. So.
I guess the question then, Tyler, is this, right? As long as we're paying our lawmakers, they might listen to what we have to say about these kinds of issues, huh?
Yeah, didn't you see The Dark Knight? Who was it? Dick Durbin had a role in that? Come on.
Oh, man. Well, okay. So anyway, let me take this off the top again. I'm going to try this one more time, guys. hopefully the blood will stop shooting out of my eyeballs when this... yeah. On Monday, six former members of Congress who were paid $20,000 each plus expenses heard testimony in a setting designed to resemble a Capitol Hill hearing. A setting designed to resemble a Capitol Hill hearing. It wasn't actually a Capitol Hill hearing. It was just a setting. I'm feeling like Alex Jones now. I'm starting to see why that guy screams into microphones. A setting that was designed to resemble a Capitol Hill hearing.
2 weeks in a row now.
It'd be better if it looked like the old Land of the Lost set or something.
I can't stop this feeling
If we're going to pay them $20,000 each, can we at least have dinosaurs roaming around as well? Seriously?
And those energy dome balls.
Look, I don't know about you guys. I've got my dinosaur right here.
And can we please bring for a couple wacky, wavy, inflatable, arm-waving tube men?
Yes. I second that motion. As a matter of fact, we'll throw that in since you're already paying, what is it? 20 times 6, my math isn't good here, remind me. Is that $12,000, right?
What?
Not 12,000, 120, I mean. See, I told you I was bad with math. I swear to God, I'm like dyslexic with numbers. So $120,000, am I correct? The chat room will correct me if I'm wrong here.
Everybody's got a calculator.
Plus expenses.
God, if I had more than $100,000, do you think I'm going to pay a bunch of former members of Congress to come and listen to me rant about UFOs?
Yeah, of course, man.
I'm going to try.
What else could you spend that money on?
I'm going to try and get through this story one more time, and then we will talk about this. Tyler, hold your commentary.
Hold on. This needs to foreshadow the story.
All right,
it's not a bad idea if you're looking at it from an advertising perspective. I mean, $120,000 is a drop in the bucket. You're getting big names out there. The chat room's talking about the media coverage this event has had. I mean, weren't we speaking earlier about how the promoters are indeed very good at garnishing capital and promoting these ideas? Greer is he involved in this?
Well,
it's a trap!
Greer is there, but there's a different Steve involved. Now, Steve Bassett is someone we know here at the program. Caleb and I hung out with Steve literally, what was it, a month ago in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
But now Steve Urkel's getting involved in the UFO community.
the third Steve, yes. I know Steve Bassett. I like Steve Bassett. I gave him a copy of my book. We've had dinner. We've had wine together. But again, it's just amazing that if we had, I'm just thinking, I say to these guys right here, right now, and folks, hear me out. If you had $100,000 and you said, okay, what can we do with this money to really further our advancement, or advance our knowledge with regard to the UFO phenomenon, or anything else for that matter, my God, we're going to pay former politicians to sit and indulge us in a setting that is made only to look, okay, like a Capitol Hill hearing room, made to resemble one. It's not an actual one, because you know what? On Capitol Hill, they're not going to have us in there talking about UFOs and aliens. Yes, it's a sad state of affairs, and so apparently the best thing we can do is we can go to the press club and pay hundreds of thousands, or at least a little more than $100,000, to have a bunch of people sit there and indulge us for a while.
As a matter of fact, money well spent in this economy.
You know, one of the photographs of one of the former congressmen I saw sitting there, I swear it looks like he's sitting there with a beer in front of him.
And he's sitting there with the reptilian bodyguard of Barack Obama.
It could have been an iced tea, I'm not sure. But
they should have built a replica ark and had hosted it. Come on, let's have some fun with this.
You know, for a mere $25,000, Tyler, they probably could have built an ark that they hosted. They could have had actually pairings of all the different kind of animals known in North America on loan from the Washington Zoo.
Or just gotten the Broadway rendition of the Lion King to come in some different costumes.
There are 100 things, 100,000, 120 plus thousand things that they probably could have done despite my bad mathematics. But anyway,
about 120,000 used Tamagotchis on eBay and just like wiggled around on them and seen how they evolved.
They could have paid us to come up there and give live coverage.
Yes.
For several hours, ufologists like Stanton Friedman, who calls himself the original civilian investigator of a supposed alien encounter in Roswell, New Mexico in 1947, testified about extraterrestrial visits to Earth and an alleged conspiracy to suppress the truth about them. Now, a flying saucer crashed and was retrieved by the government, Friedman said of the Roswell episode. It's clear that the materials were like nothing from this planet, and it's clear that there was a cover-up.
Dun-dun.
Aliens are visiting, governments are lying.
Dun-dun.
Oh my God.
Dun-dun.
Look, I've just got to say, I was sitting there with Stanton, who I respect, and Richard Dolan, who probably, and Rich is up there right now. Rich, talk about the voice of reason in ufology. Rich is one of those people who I couldn't tell you how much respect I have for Richard Dolan. I love that guy, and he's a friend, you know. The most fun I've had doing a radio program, aside from doing this show each week in recent memory, was being on Rich's show, okay, on our friends on the KGRA radio network. And being on Rich Dolan's program talking about UFOs, I mean, that being around that guy is a truly enlightening experience. But I just don't know if I agree with everything Stanton Friedman says. I have interviewed Stanton no less than three times.
Do you say that, my friend?
No, I'm going to tell you, I've interviewed Stanton no less than three times. I have met him in person at least two times. I've read a lot of Stanton's articles and books and things over the years, but the thing is that I don't know that you can look at Roswell and say definitively that there was a crash, that it was a cover-up.
Skeptic!
Yeah, I am skeptical at times.
You blood-sucking skeptic.
You know, anyway, but those are very definitive statements is what I'm saying. A UFO truth organization called the Paradigm Research Group is spending $600,000, reportedly donated by a Canadian oil baron, to stage the week-long hearing and videotape the testimony for a documentary. It's the same group that filed a petition on the White House's We the People website in 2011, urging President Obama to formally acknowledge an extraterrestrial presence engaging the human race.
And we all know those We the People petitions are a mockery.
We all know that they are absolutely the only way that we will get transparency in government, Tyler. What are you talking about?
Listen, Piers Morgan back to England.
No. We know if we get enough Facebook likes, then we'll get disclosure.
Well, here's what the response was, okay, to that, which Stephen Bassett and the Paradigm Research Group had actually initiated. The response from the White House was the U.S. government has no evidence that any life exists. Listen, folks, please listen to me very carefully when I read this. I'm not saying trust government. I'm just saying listen to what the actual White House response to this petition was.
Do you want me to point out the things I catch?
Yes, please do. But let me finish this portion first. Okay, here's what they said. The U.S. government has no evidence that any life exists outside our planet, or that an extraterrestrial presence has contacted or engaged any member of the human race.
Sounds like subterranean.
I said let me finish, Tyler. In addition, there is no credible information to suggest that any evidence is being hidden from the public eye. Now, since Tyler interrupted us once, we're going to read this through entirely one more time. I advise Caleb to turn off his microphone if he tries to interrupt me one more time.
Well, will you let me finish? He's Rothbard over here, people.
The U.S. government has no evidence that any life exists outside our planet or that an extraterrestrial presence has contacted or engaged any member of the human race. In addition, there is no credible information to suggest that any evidence is being hidden from the public eye. Now, I turn it over to producer of the program, Tyler Pittman. Tyler, what did you catch as we were reading that?
I need it a third time.
No, you don't.
I was so wound-licked that I didn't pay attention.
No, you don't need it a third time. Look, here's the only things that I'll point out about this. They word it very carefully.
I'm serious. Read it one more time. It's so short. Come on.
The U.S. government has no evidence that any life exists outside our planet.
Subterraneans.
Or that an extraterrestrial presence has contacted or engaged any member of the human race.
Subterraneans.
In addition, there is... But that would still be terrestrial, wouldn't it?
Not extraterrestrial.
They'd probably poke their head out.
Okay, that could be non-human, but not extraterrestrial as well.
Exactly.
And finally, in addition, there is no credible information to suggest that any evidence is being hidden from the public eye.
No credible? Credibility.
Exactly.
This goes into that whole argument of legitimation.
Now, one thing that Stanton Friedman has brought to the table here, okay, and has said many times, and during the panel discussion where he and Rich Dolan and I, that was, if anything, the most incredible thing I've experienced was being on stage with Stanton. He was literally to the left of me. He fell asleep at one point while I was talking. And then Rich Dolan, the three of us were there on a panel discussion, the last event of the 2013 International UFO Congress. And Stanton says, frankly, we know that the government is lying to us. And the reason why is because that We the People petition response was obviously bunk. We know that they're withholding information, and yet they say they have no credible evidence. Well, but here's the question I have. And I'll just say this, too, folks. Over the years, if you're a serious UFO researcher, there's no way that you're going to escape the influence of other researchers. And every now and then, you're going to meet somebody who's a little further on down the road than you are. And in my experience, yes, I have met people who have said, I have at times been exposed to information. I have at times interacted with individuals. And this is what I can tell you. And I have had people, okay, who have had interactions with upper echelons of government. You know, Edgar Mitchell, the NASA astronaut, he was one of the very people that I spoke to. I have spoken with a lot of people over the years who I feel are probably more in the know than I am. But this is the general consensus among those individuals. Hell, Alex Jones himself has said this on his radio program. that there is less credible. Well, there's a lot of evidence of different things, but it's all subject to interpretation. In terms of proof of extraterrestrial visitation to Earth, there's very little. And when people go out there saying, you know what, we know government is hiding the truth, when the government responds and says there's no credible evidence, sure, there's evidence of something, but how do you interpret that evidence? The problem is this evidence is something that is subject to interpretation by different individuals. The government may not be lying when they come forward and they say, no, the government may not be lying.
I agree.
The government may not be lying when they tell us that there is no evidence that they have seen that warrants further inquiry into whether or not alien beings, extraterrestrials, are visiting planet Earth.
And obviously that's the first thing on their mind when they wake up.
I don't think it is, you know.
Disclosure.
And the thing
is, we have to let these people know.
Now, coming back to Stephen Greer, Greer has said that he has briefed every U.S. president, I think, since maybe Clinton, you know. And furthermore, one of our other guys who's up there right now, okay, Grant Cameron.
Where's his evidence?
Well, that's a good question.
I want to see the Instagram.
But now, I'll tell you who does have evidence is Grant Cameron. Now, Grant Cameron is someone who has talked about this quite a bit. And as a matter of fact, actually, this was discussed at the 2013 UFO Congress. Grant Cameron talked about the photos, okay, of Lawrence Rockefeller walking along with Hillary Clinton when he had the Clintons to his... he's got a ranch, and they were there visiting, and he had taken Hillary for a walk, and she's carrying a book that had to do with, I guess, interstellar contact with other beings and other extraterrestrial races and things like that. Yes, it is known, and people have talked for years, including Stephen Greer, about the Rockefeller Initiative, that they do want government to be more forthcoming about information as it pertains to extraterrestrial intelligences visiting Earth. But the thing is that first bring forth some credible evidence of that. I'm not saying that extraterrestrials have not visited Earth. I'm not saying that extraterrestrials don't exist. In my heart, I couldn't prove it to you, but in my heart, I feel that yes, extraterrestrials probably do exist. And yes, that we probably are not the only intelligent life in the universe. But I don't know that you can absolutely, without question, 100% of the time, always, inevitably, draw parallels between the UFO enigma and the apparent presence of extraterrestrials. We believe that extraterrestrials may exist, and there's some pretty damn good evidence that UFOs are visiting Earth, but I don't know that there is necessarily, without question, a link scientifically that can be drawn and irrefutably between the two. I just don't. And so when I hear people like, again, someone who I researched, Stanton Friedman, saying when the visitors started coming to Earth, you know, but what proof do you have of the visitors? You know, you are a ufologist, man. You're a nuclear physicist. Nuclear, listen to me. My God. That was a Bushism.
Nuclear.
He came in this week in the media, and it's just like residual all over everyone.
Well, if you're a nuclear physicist, you know, you have to have had exposure to different projects the government had been involved in over the years. A lot of these things could be our own just as well. I'm not saying that extraterrestrials haven't visited Earth, but we have to watch the way that we go before former members of Congress that were paying thousands of dollars, tens of thousands of dollars to... Oh, my God.
Yeah, Mr. Jones, you've come back.
Paying to speak to Congress.
I'm getting... It's not Congress. It's former members of Congress.
Well,
Mike Gravel. You know, listen to this one right here. I love this. Listen to this story right here, okay? This was from MLive.com. Carolyn Cheeks, Kilpatrick on UFO hearings. I don't want it to be a joke. Detroit, Michigan. UFO researchers can't get Congress to listen to testimony about their extraterrestrial studies. This first line says it all. Listen to the nutgraph, folks. For all you who don't speak journalist speak, that's the first paragraph of the news item. UFO researchers can't get Congress to listen to testimony about their extraterrestrial studies, so they're having their say this week before a group of former lawmakers who they're paying, including Carolyn Cheeks Kirkpatrick, or Kilpatrick. Now, Kilpatrick, a former U.S. House representative from Detroit, who's the mother of jailed ex-mayor... how do you pronounce his name? Kwame? Is that really it?
Kwame? He's a Kwameanist.
Okay.
I forgot what scandal he was involved in. We can only imagine Detroit.
She is the mother of jailed ex-mayor... I'm sorry, one more time, Kwame Kilpatrick is one of six former members of Congress taking part in the five-day series of non-governmental hearings known as the Citizen Hearing on Disclosure in Washington. Look, I see, and again, with all due respect to all those involved, including Stephen Bassett, somebody who I like, someone who I call a friend, with all due respect to them, if it's not really before Congress, if you're having to pay former members of Congress to be here, What are we really doing? What are we really dealing with?
It sounds like community service.
Well, you know, it is. But see, these people, I think that's the whole thing. They feel that they are doing a service to the community. But the whole thing is, and this is what just gets me. This is what really gets me. Where are we really going with this? Are we really hoping to convince anybody if we're not going before actual lawmakers with this?
Spectacle.
Is it a political spectacle? I don't know. Listen, we're going to be analyzing a little more of this. I just want to understand where we're going with this and if there's going to be any actual headway in relation to the UFO enigma made. I'm Micah Hanks. This is the Grayling Report. Stay tuned. For most of us, chocolate is a guilty pleasure. Come on, admit it. You've got a sweet tooth just like the rest of us. But if I told you that eating chocolate was actually really good for your health and happiness, you'd probably say I was in La La Land. Hey, I wouldn't argue. Here's why. Every batch of the fine handcrafted chocolates at La La Land Organics Raw Chocolate is made from scratch, using organic, fair trade, and 100% natural ingredients. From the first bite, you'll know you're enjoying true quality, and the heart shape isn't the only way you'll feel the love. In fact, every chocolate from La La Land Organics is made by Melody Dawn Germain herself, and according to her own special recipe. You'll be enjoying Ecuadorian heirloom cacao in every bite, along with a selection of wholesome herbs and superfood supplements that not only make La La Land Organics delicious, but really good for your health and happiness. They're all natural, gluten-free, and no dairy, soy, or refined sugars are included, which help them boost your energy, reduce stress, and promote longevity. And as if healthy organic chocolates didn't remove the guilt factor enough, Melody ships all her orders in reusable, food-grade, non-BPA containers designed to eliminate toxic residue and cut down on environmental waste. Be sure and visit Melody's website at www.mdgnewmedia.com. That website again is mdgnewmedia.com. Just click chocolate in the toolbar at the top of the page. You can't miss it. And while you're there, you can see a full list of the ingredients that will be sure to put a smile on your face. And I promise, it's guilt-free. La La Land Organics Raw Chocolate. Why wait? That website again is mdgnewmedia.com. I'm Micah Hanks, and this is the Grayling Report. So again, you know, some friends of the program, some fantastic researchers. In fact, a few of the people who are there in Washington right now are Grant Cameron, Linda Moulton Howe, Richard Dolan, Stanton Friedman. You know, we had Linda Moulton Howe at our Paradigm Symposium last October. I also managed to have brunch with her in Pennsylvania last November.
What did you guys eat?
Let's see here. What did we have? God, there was all sorts of stuff. There were like melons.
The alien baby from the...
No, there were like pastries and melons and stuff, and there was Eggs Benedict. Anyway, it's... No,
what did Linda eat?
I didn't see what Linda ate.
Why do you want to know?
I want to know her diet.
What do you feed a Linda?
I didn't catch what she had eaten, but, you know, Grant Cameron was there at that gathering with us just as well. That's where I met Grant for the first time. As a matter of fact, I was getting off of the... I was actually being picked up at the airport, and this gentleman, this tall fellow, and his wife are standing there, and I said, "Hi, I haven't met you." And he says, "Grant Cameron." Well, this is Grant Cameron, the presidential's UFO website, of course, and one of the very gentlemen who's there in Washington right now. That's how I met Grant Cameron.
Did he pocket the ticket for you? I mean, was he? Did he pay?
No,
for you?
We did meet right there. But no, what happened was he and I, Thomas Fusco, also going to be a speaker at this year's 2013 Paradigm Symposium. Tom Fusco, Grant Cameron, Chris Bledsoe of the Fayetteville UFO incident. You know, we were all hanging out in an airport together, and we caught a bus with Chip Coffey and Lloyd Pye, who has the Star Child skull, and we actually rode together back to a hotel
Could you see the Star Child skull?
You know, I didn't see the Star Child skull, but Lloyd Pye had a number of replicas with him that were just absolutely incredible. And I actually, most of my talk back, you know, it was an hour ride from the Philadelphia airport to the hotel where we were staying. And Lloyd Pye and I sat together on the bus and talked about that. And I'll tell you, that's some incredible stuff. Greer and his alien, which apparently, according to the Sirius documentary itself, is genetically human. Okay. The Star Child skull may be a little more interesting than that.
Well, I mean, it's just James Carville, you know, that's what they call him when he's off the air.
Yeah, well, you know, actually, Joshua P. Warren here in Nashville has the Paranormal Museum, and he's got the old alien that Art Bell used to own, which before that had belonged to Rush Limbaugh, and he kept it in his studio, and he called it Carville because he said it looked like the political commentator.
Along with Ralph Lael's alien Muppet.
Yeah, so, but anyway, coming back to this, you know, Tyler said something interesting during the break. You know, what these people in Washington are not doing correctly is they're not using the right language. And I hate to say this, but they do need to be a little bit more conservative about the way that they term all this.
Right. Well, I agree with that, but we're still stuck using kind of like the definitions and the terms, the acronyms that were first brought forth in even like the golden age, you know, the 40s, the 50s, and a lot has changed since then.
Oh, yeah.
Our ideas of UFO phenomenon or unknown aerial phenomenon have definitely developed over time. So why are we still referring to...
Why do we still call them flying saucers? That's one thing I've always wondered.
Or why are we stuck on this idea of an extraterrestrial?
Because
meaning
it's so
extra land dwelling.
Well, I think that's a pretty
supra space.
That's a pretty basic interpretation of what UFOs may be. Okay. UFOs could be a lot of different things. UFOs could sometimes be secret governmental craft, which, you know, of all people, the skeptic Robert Schaefer, who I also met at the Congress for the first time, Robert Schaefer told me he didn't think that the secret government craft angle on UFOs was very logical. And the reason why is because he said, well, but the government would disclose that kind of information. I'm sorry, what evidence do you have as a skeptic that the government is always willfully going to release all the information? Now, see, in that instance, again, I'm in the pocket with the disclosure advocates there, because if a skeptic wants to bolster his argument by saying, oh, government would have disclosed all that information, I'm sorry, I don't think that everything that happens behind the scenes is released to the public knowledge within just a few years or a few decades even. That's just not the case. There's things about World War II that we still don't have access to, and repeated FOIA requests have not been able to garner information about. So for Robert Schaefer and other skeptics who say, oh, no, the government would give us that information, there's no conspiracy there, I'm sorry, that's bull. That's bunk.
Well,
it's not accurate.
That's top down. I mean, it's not even the Patriot Act, but we know under the Obama administration, and I'm talking about the administration, transparency is actually way harder to achieve than it was under the Bush administration. Mm-hmm. It's like this line we're going down. And then on top of that, you know, a UFO, who's going to know that you're an inebriated uncle viewing a matchbox car shot out of a potato gun with a Roman candle strapped to it? You know, I mean, there's so many. That's what I'm saying. We need a different way of defining this. And I know that people are doing that. Researchers in the field are positing forth new definitions and stuff, but it's not seeming to pick up the kind of mass usage that we need to. I mean, let's look at this again. A citizen's hearing on disclosure, where they're talking about UFOs and ETs. I mean, they're spending how much money? We've already talked about this, and they're still using
in excess
definitions that were framed during the beginning of the Cold War era.
Yeah, well, you know, I have a lot of feelings about this. First of all, I'm just going to say this, and I won't comment further. I have personal doubts about the Canadian oil baron or whatever they're saying, who's the funder. You know, I'm not trying to criticize, because a lot of these people are my friends, you know, especially, I really have a lot of respect for Rich Dolan, Grant Cameron, Stanton Friedman. But I just
under the impression that all the funding came from independent people that just donated. Asked.
Well, that could be barons.
Stephen Greer with the Sirius film. He had actually crowdsourced funding. The official story is that there is a Canadian oil baron or something along those lines who provided this information. But where the money
really, have oil in Canada?
The official story.
Where the money came from, though, to me is of less importance as, you know, in terms of, you know, where we're going with this, as what we do with the money. And I'm not saying that they're mishandling it, but I am saying that we need to look very critically at the terminology, as Tyler pointed out, the terminology that's used, the people who are there speaking, a lot of them I like, so I mean, I don't necessarily have a problem with that, but also who they're bringing this information to. They're paying former members of Congress. Why don't we go to some real members of Congress? I mean, I know that's easier said than done. We'll pick this up in the next segment of the program right after this. It is the Graylian Report. I'm Micah Hanks.
Carl Sagan once wrote that the questioning mind needs to be instilled with both skepticism and wonder, for the universe is a pretty big place, filled with undelved mysteries, sciences, and life that we've barely begun to comprehend. Every month, Intrepid Magazine brings you both the wondrous and the skeptical. Intrepid Magazine focuses on science, metaphysics, UFOs, politics, conspiracies, and unexplained phenomena, all offered up by Intrepid's cadre of writers and contributors, comprised of a host of seasoned authors, pundits, and recognized names in their fields. The universe is indeed a big place, and where other magazines leave off, Intrepid Mag is just beginning. Subscribe to Intrepid Magazine today at www.intrepidmag.com. That's www.intrepidmag.com.
Is the Graylian Report. The unusual, weird news, anomalies, exopolitics. It's beyond the fringe, where conspiracy theory can become conspiracy fact. This is the Graylian Report with your host, Micah Hanks.
Welcome back to the program. To reach us live here on the program, 828-398-4886-4886. Skype users can reach the program at graylianreport.com, or you can always info us, reach our info line, info at graylianreport.com.
Info us at antiinfowars.us.
That was called Failing in the Bunker right there with Micah Hanks. Anyway, I want to point something else out that's kind of interesting and maybe a bit troubling, too. Now, this New York Daily News report that deals with the citizens' hearing. Again, I'm not trying to be overtly critical because I support what they're doing. I really like the people who are up there. But we've got to be careful about how we present this kind of information before quote-unquote officialdom, even though that's questionable, in my opinion, in this instance, because, I mean, when you have former members of Congress, in other words, civilians, who you're paying tens of thousands of dollars, okay?
Can you name the former congressmen that are in attendance?
There are a bunch of them. Let's see.
Give us an idea about the audience for the citizens' hearing.
Let's see. A few that we have here, according to the Huffington Post. Let's see here. Let's see who we
have. Bastion of journalism.
I've got to get to the top of this thing here, but I want to get to something else here in just a moment in relation to that, and a few audio clips just as well that have been posted online. Okay, so this is taking place at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. We have former...
Where we just had the White House Correspondents' Dinner.
Correct.
Must be really cheap, when you ask to rent the cleanup aisle.
Well, I mean, you know, of course, they spent all the rest of their money on getting the former congressman there for
old
the actual
shrimp.
Event. But we have former Senator Mike Gravel. Okay, we have former Congresswoman Carolyn Kilpatrick, former Congresswoman Lynn Woolsey, we have former Congresswoman Darlene Hooley. Boy, what's up with these double O's? There are double O's there. And
extra.
They're agents.
Extra vowel.
We have former Congressman Roscoe Bartlett, and we have former Congressman Merrill Cook, who we'll be hearing a bit of audio from here in just a moment. So those are the former lawmakers, the former...
What was the last one? Sorry.
That was a former Congressman Merrill Cook, a representative in the state of Utah. But now listen to this. In addition to the fact that these people, none of them actually currently hold office. Again, you know, there's reason for that. And it's also very difficult to get people who are active members of the body politic to get involved in something along these lines because, of course, they have constituencies to answer to. They have also, of course, their political parties that they have to answer to. It's so easy in this age of media in which we have these 24-hour news cycles and everything is overtly sensationalized. I think it's all too easy for political scandals to break out. So, of course, nobody who's involved currently in politics, with the exception of maybe Dennis Kucinich or Ron Paul, are going to get out there and put their names behind something related to UFOs and ETs. Okay. So, of course, we have to have people who are formally involved, and I understand that. But by the same token, we're spending a lot of money on basically having people who at one time had some influence. They may still have political influence, but they're not actually, you know, they're not involved in the process of, you know, passing legislation. You know, the most they might be able to do is what, you know, any lobbyist on K Street could do. They can go up there, and because of their notoriety, you know, because of what they've done, because of the position they've held in government, they can go and they can talk to other lawmakers. They can talk to other standing members of the Senate and the Congress and talk to them and try and influence them and try and bring to their attention the seriousness of the UFO ET equation. But then again, honestly, in the mainstream, how seriously is this going to be taken? Well, here's something I think that needs to be brought to the attention of people. This is what the New York Daily News, and Tyler, I'm going to come to you right after this, but listen to this. 100 people packed the ballroom, okay, at the National Press Club. It says some of them believers in the hollow earth theory. Now, we talk an awful lot about the hollow earth on this program. Broadcasting from a bunker underground, we probably know a little bit about the hollow earth, but I don't know how seriously any of the three of us here, any of the staff, you know, in the history of the Graylian Report have ever really taken the hollow earth, but seriously. Some of the people there, this is according to the New York Daily News, believers in the hollow earth theory that aliens live deep inside the planet. I saw photographs online accompanying this article. We'll have that linked in the show notes this week. They wore silver-colored headbands with what appeared to be fake diamonds on the front. Now, Jane Stevens, who helps run the website hollowearthnetwork.com, said that the headgear functioned as a third eye that heightened perceptions and allows contact with other dimensions. So these are the kind of people who are up there in Washington representing the UFO ET disclosure movement.
And how do they know that these aliens are wearing Kmart gumball machine bling?
Tell me about it. I mean,
it's interesting. I did like as quick of a little bit of research as I could with the members, and it looks like it's largely bipartisan. With Darlene.
Yeah,
Newley,
yeah. Mike Gravel's formerly, I believe, a Democrat. Carolyn
Alaska.
Kilpatrick was a Democrat from Michigan. Lynn Woolsey was a Democrat from California. Darlene Hooley was a Democrat from Oregon. Republican Roscoe Bartlett, formerly of, I believe, Maryland. And then I think Merrill Cook was also a Republican, who, as I'd said before, had been, I believe, a representative in the state of Utah.
And Hooley served on the Science and Technology, Energy and Commerce, and Budget Committees. Bartlett was on the Subcommittee on Tactical Air and Land Forces, which he chaired, Subcommittee on Sea Power and Projection Forces, Committee on Science, Space Technology, Research and Science Education, Energy and the Environment, and the Subcommittee on Agriculture, Energy, and Trade.
They have well-informed individuals. They have people who have been formally involved directly in the political processes underlying America.
And a chat user, I'm waiting for the name, also noted earlier with Merrill Cook, who I believe is a Republican, that one of the colleagues, Janet Jensen, who was demoted, talked about Merrill in this quote, "Merrill has taken up permanent residence in Wacko Land. If he asks you to fax his underwear to the speaker's office, please just do it." And in order to give the, you know, the right kudos, I'm waiting for the name.
Well, I'll just say this also with regard to Merrill Cook. He also asks some very good questions. For which Rich Dolan and a couple of the others had very good answers as well. We'll get to that in just a moment, because Stephen Bassett had apparently allowed a small segment of audio to be with some sort of music playing under beneath it to be posted on YouTube. Now, folks who want to tune in and watch this, as you know, I have tried to do over the last several hours amidst other show prep going on. For only $3.80, you can go to the Citizens Disclosure website. And that website, I believe, let's see here. I don't have the website directly in front of me, so I don't want to give that out if I don't have the information.
CitizensDisclosure.geocities.
Is that what it is? it's not GeoCities. I believe it's
Tripod.
Okay, here we've got it now. It's www.citizenhearing.org. If you go to that website, you can, as a matter of fact, actually from that website, there are a lot of different things you can do. But if you want between the hours of 9 and 5 Eastern time to actually watch the disclosure, and I do recommend that people do this. And of course, you'll be helping those people who are putting their money where their mouth is. You can help Stephen Bassett. You can help Rich Dolan, Stanton Friedman, Linda Moulton Howell, Grant Cameron, and all those people who are up there arguing, you know, at very least, whether or not I agree with everything that they're doing and the way that they're going about it, you know, what they're trying to do is good. Their intentions are good, but good intentions, you remember the old expression, guys, the road to hell is paved with good intentions?
Yep.
I'm telling you, folks, you've got to be more careful, and like Tyler said, we've got to use proper terminology. This is the very reason why after Stephen Bassett launched the first petition, the We the People petition to the White House, Bryce Zabel and Rich Dolan did a second one where they didn't even say UFO. They certainly didn't say extraterrestrial, but they didn't even say UFO. They said UAP, and unfortunately they weren't able to get enough signatures to garner a response. So that's one more reason I'm so glad to see Rich Dolan up there testifying at this event. But again, you know, we're not really, and we've gone over the reasons why you wouldn't necessarily be able to have direct access to standing members of Congress or Senate, but come on, we're paying a lot of money to people who no longer hold actual positions in political office. They're not even holding this, you know, this is at the press club. Again, it's really, and it's been well known that this is a mock hearing. They're going through the motions for purposes of gaining, you know, truly attention, you know, and garnering attention to this subject matter, hoping that maybe people, lawmakers and people who are standing members of Senate, Congress, you know, and other positions in government will take this subject more seriously. And we want to be able to know the truth. But again, the fundamental questions I have are, A, is the government actually hiding any information? Is there any information that the government has that we don't have access to? I do think that that's probably the case, but does it pertain to extraterrestrials? I think that's unlikely, and there's no way to prove that. B, are we using the proper terminology in terms of how we are approaching government about this? And then finally, of course, in this kind of a circumstance, when we're putting this kind of money into something like this, sure, it's going to garner a lot of attention, and it's something that's very important, but is that the best way to use the money?
Well, I'm looking at this, and the fact that it is a .org tells me that this is probably going to be written off as a tax write-off. These people are probably, in other words, and looking at the thing, I don't think it's a bad idea. Don't get me wrong. I'm not
poo-pooing. No, I admire what they're doing
on this, but it is interesting. Like, I think I'm going to default to my original thesis that this is advertising. We're going to see these guys working on something else, maybe even bigger. But point B, I think it's time to look at this and reframe the type of phenomenon, the type of experiences and stuff we
absolutely
want to really discuss. UFO, using UFO, being someone who is interested in that lifelong and has, you know, read books and followed that call, I don't know if that acronym is really suitable anymore. I think that might be a facet of the 20th century that we need to redefine.
Well, if that weren't the case,
you know, let's collectively come to an agreement on some alternatives.
If that weren't the case,
with ET.
If that were, yes, exactly. And if that weren't the case, why would, again, Rich Dolan and Bryce Zabel have authored a separate White House petition where they said unidentified aerial phenomena? Because unidentified flying object entails something that is technological in origin. Maybe not all UFOs. Let's just think outside the box for a moment here. Maybe not all UFOs are technological devices. What if, you know, for instance,
yes,
go all the way back to, and this sounds kooky, but let's just, you know, exercise our ability to think outside the box for a moment and say, go back to Trevor James Constable. He wrote a book back, I think, in the 1950s or 60s called The Cosmic Pulse of Life. I was able to interview Constable years and years ago. It was really a one-off. He doesn't do many interviews anymore.
Well, anyone named Constable has got authority.
Well, Trevor James Constable wrote this book, and of course, he called UFOs critters because he thought that they were essentially what Arthur Conan
Conan Doyle had described in his short story, The Horror of the Heights, he thought that they were atmospheric life forms. Now, what if some UFOs actually were atmospheric life forms? Then unidentified flying object, that would certainly still apply, but the insinuation that an unidentified flying object is technological in origin would not. And therefore, unidentified aerial phenomenon would still constitute, I think, a broader spectrum of different things that UFOs may be. And this is why Rich Dolan and Bryce Zabel use that terminology, which, again, I think is the more conservative use of terminology for hope of being able to reach a wider swath of potentials and possibilities in terms of what the government might be willing to disclose information about. That's the way that we have to do it. That's the reason that that Rich and Bryce did it the way that they did. And, of course, I think this is the only way, let me say again, the only way that we will be able to move forward in terms of actually garnering information from government bodies in relation to unidentified whatevers that we apparently observe not just in our atmosphere, in the air above us, but also on the ground, underground, you know, all around us, in our dreams for that matter. You can't deny that there are strange things that happen within the confines of the human experience, but guys, we have to be scientific. We have to be, you know, I'm not saying politically conservative, but we have to be conservative in terms of our word usage and how we frame the discussion if we're ever to be taken seriously about this.
Well, not only is the term unidentified aerial phenomenon more conservative, it's also more accurate because since the times where UFO became mainstream vernacular, we have come to realize the reality of things such as plasma weaponry.
Exactly. Or naturally forming plasmas.
Exactly.
Think about the Brown Mountain Lights, which are probably, in all likelihood, something along the lines of a plasma kind of manifestation like ball lightning.
And see, using that term or the acronym UAP is more likely to yield tangible results, tangible disclosure, than something like UFO.
Obviously.
And I'm not saying there's a problem with UFO. I'm just saying we need to, if we're really interested in mining the guts out of what's going on, we need to reassess our tactics. And part of that would be a strategy of implementing new definitions, new avenues of obtaining disclosure. And part of that is through introducing new verbiage.
I think the hard part about that is getting people to latch on to the new verbiage, because people are so married to the terms that
people are resistant to change.
Yeah,
man.
They are so married to the term UFO. They don't want to call it anything else because they spent their entire lives equating something with another thing, and that being most of the time biological ETs.
It's romantic.
Exactly.
I mean, it's a tradition.
Exactly.
Which we were talking about earlier, and Americans, not just Americans, all cultures love their traditions. And this is a tradition that all cultures share, but in the modern age, postmodern age, we are using the same terms for UFO. I think it was last week or the week before we were talking about different phenomenon that was interpreted differently. Dragons in the sky flying, let's say in China. Would they call it the jinn or angels in Mesopotamia?
Well, they're different
Titans.
Names.
Exactly, but it is a tradition. Something, and that's what leads me to believe that something is out there. There is truth out there, but if we want to get the truth, we shouldn't be so held to these outdated concepts.
Terms are just terms. Words are words, but you know what? Words come to represent things that are of importance to individuals, and that's, of course, what we're dealing with right now.
Worms eat dirt.
And the dirt makes the earth.
And the earth gives us life.
And here we are on Earth trying to understand extraterrestrial realities. I'm Micah Hanks. This is the Gray Leader Report. When we come back, we're going to look at a couple of audio sound bites, very brief sound bites, then we'll continue our discussion with regard to the citizens' hearing. What are we dealing with? Is it the most effective use of funding, you know, that we could be attributing to understanding the UFO enigma? We'll delve into that a bit deeper when we come back. I'm Micah Hanks. This is the Gray Leader Report. Stay tuned.
For most of us, chocolate is a guilty pleasure. Come on, admit it. You've got a sweet tooth just like the rest of us. But if I told you that eating chocolate was actually really good for your health and happiness, you'd probably say I was in La La Land. Hey, I wouldn't argue. Here's why. Every batch of the fine handcrafted chocolates at La La Land Organics Raw Chocolate is made from scratch, using organic, fair trade, and 100% natural ingredients. From the first bite, you'll know you're enjoying true quality, and the heart shape isn't the only way you'll feel the love. In fact, every chocolate from La La Land Organics is made by Melody Dawn Germain herself, and according to her own special recipe. You'll be enjoying Ecuadorian heirloom cacao in every bite, along with a selection of wholesome herbs and superfood supplements that not only make La La Land Organics delicious, but really good for your health and happiness. They're all natural, gluten-free, and no dairy, soy, or refined sugars are included, which help them boost your energy, reduce stress, and promote longevity. And as if healthy organic chocolates didn't remove the guilt factor enough, Melody ships all her orders in reusable, food-grade, non-BPA containers designed to eliminate toxic residue and cut down on environmental waste. Be sure and visit Melody's website at www.mdgnewmedia.com. That website again is mdgnewmedia.com. Just click chocolate in the toolbar at the top of the page. You can't miss it. And while you're there, you can see a full list of the ingredients that will be sure to put a smile on your face. And I promise, it's guilt-free. La La Land Organics Raw Chocolate. Why wait? That website again is mdgnewmedia.com.
Micah Hanks broadcasting from the carousel of clandestine clowns here in the Graylian bunker. Caleb, that's some very interesting music you have there.
This is my 8-bit UFO music. When I think of flying around in a saucer, it's the best.
Well, if very
much. Every time I see a trail of Reese's Pieces.
Never play that music again.
What was it? Some kind of pervert or an sewer gator or something?
This was John Wayne Gacy's favorite song.
Oh, God.
Anyway.
No, I thought that was Oh, What a Night.
Oh, God. That was in poor taste, Tyler. Anyhow.
Was it?
You know,
I apologize.
When we left off, we were talking about the citizens' hearing. And
can we get on with... Get on with it. I'm over this.
Let's get some audio.
The citizen's hearing.
I think we need to get some audio. Now, I'd mentioned something earlier. Merrill Cook had actually brought some very interesting questions to the table earlier in the day, I believe yesterday. We have audio of that. Here's the question that he asked before the panel, and then we'll go down the list with all the panelists and what they had to say.
Before I invite maybe 15 seconds from both Mr. Friedman and Ms. Howe, could you also comment on the testimony here that hasn't really said a whole lot? It was mentioned briefly, but a whole lot about sightings before the 1940s, before the Second World War. I mean, I know you mentioned that there have been credible sightings for many, many years before, but we really don't get a whole lot of interest on the part of an administration until the 40s. Now, doesn't that add a little bit of question in terms of whether what we've just been talking about might have been a real concern for the number of hearings being held?
Okay, that was Merrill Cook right there.
What happened in July of 1945, we tested...
Hold on, we'll go to her in just a moment. Okay, now we're about to hear from Linda Moulton Howe. Now...
Always a fan favorite.
Well, now, Merrill Cook, he's asking about the sightings before the 1940s, and I think that's a very important question. Were there UFO sightings prior to the 1940s? In other words, prior to World War II.
Alexander the Great.
Well, Alexander the Great, according to some reports, had seen shields flying in the sky. Yeah. As a matter of fact, Rich Dolan brought a very interesting report from Canada, I think from the 1930s, to light. There were also the Italian, the fascist UFO files. Now, keep this in mind. Bear this in mind, because if the Italian, the fascist UFO files predating the Second World War are of valid... are a valid instance of UFO phenomenon occurring prior to the Second World War. Our friend Antonio Huenus from Open Minds, I believe he may be in Washington right now as well, Antonio had brought this to my attention. If these files are an accurate depiction of some kind of UAP that was occurring prior to the Second World War, a lot of the statements and a lot of the discussion that we are about to hear right now should be revised and reconsidered. Now, that said, let's go on to Linda Moulton Howe.
Well, even with that, I'd like to remind everyone or prod everyone just to like think over in their head the historical timeline. Before the 1940s, we know there have been reports. This goes back to what we're talking about, almost right. like a tradition within all the cultures. So, with that in mind, come on, Linda.
Speak to me sweetly. There's a tradition of a lot of different kinds of strange phenomena. And I think
aerial.
But the thing is that they're both aerial and non-aerial.
Well,
within the context of what we're discussing right now, the aerial phenomenon that appears to be technological in origin. Now, Linda Moulton Howe answered Merrill Cook's question in regard to, I think she ties nuclear events in.
What happened in July of 1945? We tested a bomb, White Sands, and then we dropped two in August on Japan. And I believe that that action, which was a nuclear event, became a focus to this intelligence. And therefore, that's how the government became so intensely aware.
Now, what's very interesting there is that after what she says, okay, Grant Cameron speaks after the fact, and Grant Cameron points out that he has no information about anything of the nature of UFOs or within the context of what we call in the modern sense UFOs occurring prior to the Second World War. Here's Grant Cameron.
I spent a lot of time trying to find stories of UFOs back in history through presidents. It starts in Roosevelt's day. It ties into the atomic bomb. If you go through presidential history, presidents are watched very closely. All their records are kept. I can find nothing before Roosevelt.
So it's a sign.
Now, that's a very interesting statement because, again, Rich Dolan has talked about statements. As a matter of fact, some very compelling descriptions of airships, what they were called in the day, prior to the Second World War. The fascist Italian UFO files talk about this same sort of thing. Again, it's very interesting that there are UFO reports that seem to predate the Second World War, and yet what we're hearing here is that Linda Moulton Howe, of course, has said that, you know, she thinks it's almost inextricably tied to the nuclear era, of course, the use of atomic weaponry toward the end of the Second World War, and which, of course, closed the Pacific theater, our ongoing conflict with Japan. Grant Cameron, again, a good researcher, says there's no evidence of anything prior to the Second World War. So Merrill comes back and asks another very interesting question in relation to, had other presidencies taken any interest or would they have taken interest in the UFO question prior to Roosevelt? And again, I want to point out that when Cameron mentions Roosevelt, he's not talking about Teddy Roosevelt. He's talking about FDR. Let's look back and see what Merrill says.
Okay, but you're not saying, Mr. Cameron, are you, or any of you saying that President Wilson would have never been interested in phenomena that might involve extraterrestrials?
So he goes back and asks again if, and what he's talking about, he's asking if, for instance, prior to FDR, would Woodrow Wilson have had interest in UFOs? Well, probably not, because UFO was not a common, a cultural meme, if you will. And furthermore, the serious study of unexplained aerial phenomena was not something that had been undertaken by governments and had not been undertaken by civilian researchers at the time.
Well,
I guess it's a rhetorical question that Merrill's asking there. But
I know FDR served more than...
He actually served two terms and then was elected to a third term,
exactly.
But died while serving in office.
When was his inaugural election?
That's a good question. I don't remember right off him.
H.G. Wells... infamous 1938 broadcast of the War of the Worlds, 1938 predates.
You mean this that I have on vinyl,
exactly,
right here?
Exactly, which kind of catapulted UFO extraterrestrial ideas into mainstream culture.
Okay.
So we need to kind of figure out a timeline here, because Orson Welles, you know, War of the Worlds, that was a phenomenon that, I mean, when I was in grade school, that was still something that's talked about, and that was 60 years previous.
Yeah, many people actually assume that that is still an instance of psychological warfare. And, of course, I'm not kidding. I'm actually holding here in the Graylian bunker, I have a vinyl record.
He really does have it on vinyl.
I really do, on vinyl right here. Orson Welles' War of the Worlds, the actual broadcast by the Mercury Theater on the air, as heard over the Columbia Broadcasting System, October 30th, 1938. The most thrilling drama ever broadcast from the famed Howard Cook script. Fake radio war stirs terror across the nation. And then they have actual clips from newspapers that actually carried this story. Okay. Where people were literally, you know, college students were fainting, and there were people who were wrecking their cars, and farmers who were arming themselves with weapons and pitchforks and all different kinds of things, because they thought that an actual alien invasion was taking place. Now,
what we would look at in today's eyes, with just coming off the tails of the Alex Jones Show, as a pre-programming false flag.
Well, I don't know about a
something
false...
that's meant to. Yes, was false. And it flagged in a new era.
I don't know about
Foo Fighters.
I would say, though, that there is a bit of what was the term that you used? Conditioning?
Yes.
I think that there is a good bit of conditioning that would occur. Anyway, all that to say, now Merrill comes back. Let's play that clip again with what he comes back and says, because he's asking Grant Cameron, who says that there were, you know, having studied the history of presidencies, that there was no evidence prior to the Second World War that he's found of UFOs. Now, Rich Dolan, he's coming up here in a moment. Rich Dolan does not refute that statement on this panel, although I know for a fact that he has evidence of, at very least, compelling encounters with UFOs that well predated the Second World War. Again, also no one here mentions what Open Minds magazine has put forth, and you can actually look online for a video called Open Minds, Your Need to Know with Antonio Huenus, where he discusses the fascist Italian UFO files, again, what apparently Mussolini and the Italians were gathering prior to the Second World War in relation to UFOs, and all the flying saucers, you know, cigar-shaped objects, all that stuff is mentioned in these files.
Yeah, probably a lot of Nazi propaganda.
Well, you know, a lot of people have said that the whole idea of Foo Fighters and Nazi UFO tech is propaganda, but if these files, okay, are to be believed, there was, you know, before the Nazis were an international threat, before we'd actually entered a conflict, the Italian government was gathering information about unidentified aerial phenomenon, which is very interesting. None of that is mentioned here during the citizens' hearing. Again, not entirely to take away from what Grant Cameron's saying, because I would argue that in support of what Cameron's saying there, the modern UFO era, without question, begins right after the Second World War with, of course, Kenneth Arnold's sighting of flying discs, or what he perceived as being similar to flying discs, over Mount Rainier. And then, of course, much later, the Roswell incident. It occurred right there at the same time, but it wasn't investigated by researchers like Stanton Friedman until many decades later. Now, so Grant Cameron again says there's no evidence. Let's go ahead and just play Grant Cameron one more time, just for clarity's sake.
I've done the presidents. I spent a lot of time trying to find stories of UFOs back in history through presidents. It starts in Roosevelt's day. It ties into the atomic bomb. If you go through presidential history, presidents are watched very closely. All their records are kept. I can find nothing before Roosevelt. So this is tied into the atomic.
Okay, so actually, to clarify, he doesn't say before the Second World War. He says nothing before Roosevelt. Now, Merrill comes back and says this.
Okay, but you're not saying, Mr. Cameron, are you, or any of you saying that President Wilson would have never been interested in phenomena that might involve extraterrestrials?
I'm sorry, that's a fair statement, but I think it's more of a rhetorical question. At this point, Rich Dolan jumps into the conversation. Here's what Rich has to say.
Wilson's service was plagued by scandal, and he's actually regarded as one of the worst presidents in history. So why would he? I mean, why would you use him as a hallmark of discussing this phenomenon?
Well, I think again here, Merrill Cook, the former congressman from Utah, is merely asking a rhetorical question in this instance. Okay,
right.
But if we wanted to talk about Woodrow Wilson, you know, we haven't done a show yet about the Federal Reserve. I'll just list the listenership. If you'd like to hear a program from the Graylian perspective on the Federal Reserve, you can email us info@graylianreport.com. We'd love to hear from you if that's a subject of interest to our listenership. You know, if you want to talk about the Federal Reserve Act and, of course, the kinds of, you know, progressive aspects of our government, progressive in the very dangerous sense, that began to take place during the Wilsonian administration, we could talk about that. That's a whole different discussion.
And I'm actually mistaken. Everything I said was actually attributed to Warren G. Harding. My apologies. Wilson was actually against the League of Nations, which was the forerunner of the United Nations. So he still could be the worst, depending on how you like to think.
Yeah, I guess it's all a matter of perspective. But anyway, okay, getting back to this audio here. So Rich Dolan comes back in regard to the statement about the Wilsonian presidency. Would Wilson have taken interest in UFOs? Here's what Dolan has to say.
I think that the difference is that we really only in our own society develop much of a capability of detecting them. I mean, in World War II, we get radar. So we develop electronic means of detection. We, for the first time ever, have a lot of people in the air. So I think in earlier times, it's not that this phenomenon didn't happen, but there were fewer stories and not really in front row center of our consciousness.
That's a very good point right there, and this is something I've said many times just as well. If a technology that is represented by UFO phenomenon had ever existed prior to the Second World War, in many instances, what must have been occurring was that it was a technology that we were not armed as humankind with the proper technological ability to observe it. Think about some of the key innovations that occurred during the Second World War. Okay, we had radar. All right, we had laser technology. We had field-tested night vision technology that the Germans were working on. Okay, we also had, as a matter of fact, actually, if we're to believe all the different kinds of avionics that the Germans may have been working on, some would assert that they were working on flying saucers, but in truth, they very well may have been working on swept-wing aircraft. Another thing was Kevlar. They'd also been working on the miniaturization of technologies along the lines of broadcast and telecommunications.
T-shirts were introduced.
T-shirts.
1942.
There were a lot of technologies that were innovated during the Second World War, but the point is that without trivializing it, I want to say that the point is here is that there is a necessity for innovation in times of war, and the reason why is because you don't want to come out anywhere but on top. And so every nation with every dispensable resource at their availability, everything that everyone had access to, they were putting that into the war effort. And so there was an incredible trend toward, in fact, I think it would be safe to say that during the Second World War, we saw what we would call a technology explosion. The beginnings of fiber optic technologies, all different sorts of things, and all the aforementioned technologies here were innovated during the Second World War. It really set a new precedent for where we were going in the West technologically in our future. Robotics, even the very beginnings of that kind of technology. I mean, they didn't have robots walking around in Nazi Germany, but the very beginnings of technologies that would lead to robotics, computers, all these kinds of things. Sonar, radar, literally, and granted, radar also existed prior to the Second World War, but again, not all the key nations involved in the global conflict had access to that. The U.S. had it. I believe the Germans had it. The Canadians were working on perfecting it, and of course, by the end of the conflict, many already had. And yet, it's radar in the early years of the UFO phenomenon that is one of the key technologies that allowed, I don't want to say earthlings, I guess, that allowed, people utilizing, I guess, radar detectors. Again, my hesitance in saying earthlings is because I don't want to say that what they were observing were obviously without question extraterrestrial. But radar operators who were utilizing radar technologies and were observing what you would call anomalies on their radar, okay, they were observing something that perhaps we might, venture to guess, okay, was existent prior to the Second World War, but was not directly observable. And what Rich is saying here is that after the Second World War and during the Second World War, we began to be armed with the kinds of technologies, and those technologies, furthermore, had been innovated to a point that we were able to utilize them in a way that allowed us to observe something in our midst, potentially, for a long time, that we hadn't been able to observe directly prior to the Second World War in the absence of those kinds of technologies, radars and other kinds of technologies. So, the question here is this something that has been in our midst for a long time and we're only now able to actually observe it and understand it technologically? Or is this something that, because of the innovations technologically that were occurring during the Second World War, is this something that actually came to exist during that period?
This is an awesome question, because within this timeline, 1940 is when the original Lascaux Cave paintings were discovered, which are some of the earliest depictions of ancient aliens that we know of. And technology aided that, but the paintings themselves are as ancient as stone men carving
Yeah.
Cave scrawlings.
In other words, now granted, there is always the interpretation of the cave drawings.
Well, of course.
Which could be put through a modern filter and interpreted as being, again, what we would call colloquially, you know, in modern times, ancient aliens, but...
And I'm not, you know, I'm not advocating that type of perception, but this is 1940, and at the end of the decade, the 40s, you know... We know that the Soviet Union obtains the ability to have their atomic bomb.
Right.
1945, the end of World War II, with an A-bomb dropped. 45, we're going back to 38 when Orwell did his War of the Worlds. It's starting
Orson Welles, not Orwell.
Orwell, no, that's in my head because 1984 was published in, where is it here? 1949.
Yeah.
So all of this stuff is, it's interesting to me just looking at this really quickly that all of this stuff is still very much at play today.
Yeah.
How far, we think we've come so far, but Alex Jones last week, some of his promos talk about 1984 becomes 1776.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? This is something that's still in the popular lexicon, more so now today than it was maybe even so in the 90s, early 90s.
Yeah.
We're talking about world wars. We're talking about the UN. We're talking about aliens.
And maybe
we're talking
the reason.
About ancient cave art. T-shirts! My God!
T-shirts were created in the 1940s. Well, I think the important thing here is, I don't remember the philosopher who had said this, but the idea would be that the 1940s seemed to be the cusp of an axial age, okay? And humankind was going through a technological revolution. And we began to uncover aspects of ourselves and the world around us that obviously begged question, further question of the nature of reality as, you know, up until that time was being perceived. Since the Second World War, since the Roosevelt presidency, you know, since the atomic age or the beginning of that, you know, we have entered a brave new world, to borrow Huxley's axiom. We are in a world that is vastly different from what we have known since the beginning of, you know, human recorded history. And what we are having to do is trying to come to terms with not only questions about our past, not only questions about where we are headed technologically, but also questions about what else or who else might be in our midst. Now, that's what's important, and I want to finish this portion up before we go to break with a final statement after what Rich Dolan says in relation to technology and how it has influenced our apparent ability to perceive the UFO phenomenon. Stanton Friedman finally weighs in the final statement from this segment.
By the end of World War II, there were three things that told our visitors from out there that soon we'd be going out there, which would scare the heck out of them because we're such a primitive society. Atomic bombs, powerful rockets used to kill, not to deliver the mail, as some people said they would, and powerful radar, the beginning of the electronics revolution. The only place in the world in July 1947 where you could check out all three of those was southeastern New Mexico. Okay.
That's just a very strange statement to me.
Yeah, I don't know how accurate it is.
And
I'm
noticed,
not saying it's inaccurate.
I just want to say also, though, that Stanton, again...
It's ethnocentric.
Yeah, and Stanton also says, our visitors out there.
Well, listen to this real quick. Oppenheimer, who is also proven to have poisoned his tutor when he was in college, also held to a belief that a nuclear war could have happened in our... ancient past.
Of course,
India.
Of course. And he
the
said
guy who created the atomic bomb also held... Well, I shouldn't say he held to a belief. He posited mysteriously that nuclear weapons could have been used in our past.
Tyler, my boy, you know I authored an essay about that. As a matter of fact, when he was witnessing the blast at Alamogordo, which he called Trinity, Robert G. Oppenheimer actually quoted the Bhagavad Gita and said, "Now I am become death, the destroyer of worlds." Indeed, Oppenheimer seemed to believe that there had been something that had taken place long before us. Is that what actually garnered the attention of extraterrestrials? I don't know about that. Any more than I know that it is fair to say that the visitors out there, I don't want to be overtly critical of Stanton. I just want to say, though, that I think that as you guys have pointed out, as I have said, and as this discussion has seemed to elucidate over the course of the last couple of hours, maybe it's time to consider fundamentally changing the terminology that we're using, because if we want our political bodies to take this seriously, and if we want individuals around the world, cross-culturally, to look at the UFO phenomenon in a very different and realistic way, we may have to change the way that we perceive the phenomenon itself. I'm Micah Hanks. This is the Graylian Report. We'll be back right after this. Stay tuned.
On the battlefield, there's a saying America's military men and women live by: never leave a fallen warrior behind, ever. Off the battlefield, Wounded Warrior Project operates with the same goal. Wounded Warrior Project was created to help our men and women returning home with the scars of war, whether those scars are physical or mental. Wounded Warrior Project, we never leave a fallen warrior behind, ever. Learn more about what we do at woundedwarriorproject.org.
Back to the program. It is the final segment of this week's edition of the Graylian Report. I'm Micah Hanks. You know, we've spent the majority of the program talking about the citizens' hearing on disclosure. I want to make, without interruption, the final statement this week about that. I really hope the very best for the folks up there in Washington, our friends Stanton Friedman, Rich Dolan, Steve Bassett, Linda Moulton Howe, all the folks who are involved in this. It is not bad what they're doing. I do think we have to be very careful about the way that we proceed if we are really seeking to understand the UFO mystery. Now, I've done a very good job as a writer myself pissing a lot of people off when I talk about UFOs, because people think, oh, you're an advocate of transhumanism, or you're a skeptic, or you're this or that. You know, and of course the skeptics look at me and they say that you're a wild-eyed, fanciful believer in the UFO extraterrestrial meme.
Fascism.
And so, yeah, you know, I've been called everything in the world. You know, I'm going to tell you, politically, philosophically, culturally, and especially in terms of phenomenology, I'm very middle of the road. I don't commit to belief, and I don't polarize or allow my views to be polarized. Now, the thing is that in relation to what we're trying to understand here, we're trying to get to the bottom of a question, a long-lasting question about a phenomenon that at least since the Second World War has been pervasive in our culture. I couldn't tell you that every instance of a claim where an individual has come forward and said, yeah, I saw something unexplained, it was a light in the sky. I couldn't tell you that all of them are worthy of further inquiry. I couldn't convince everyone that there is merit to the further study of UFOs. But what I can tell you is that our governing bodies have, at very least, whether or not they're holding information back from the public, they have taken serious interest in this phenomenon, and that to me warrants the serious consideration of whether or not, if you want to look at it in terms of extraterrestrial phenomenon, we are alone in the universe. If you want to look at it in terms of secret or clandestine earthbound technologies, it asks, you know, and I think that the most important question perhaps to ask here is there technology here or anywhere that exceeds what we know to exist? And if so, can anyone on Earth account for that technology? And if it is something from here, why is it kept secret? If it is from elsewhere, well, the same question applies. Why is it kept secret? Is it really, to quote the late zoologist Ivan Sanderson, is it that we cannot face, or that our academic bodies cannot face having to rewrite the history books? That's all I want to say about that, and then I'm going to turn the floor over to you guys about this. Caleb Hanks, your thoughts on citizen hearing on disclosure and the ongoing UFO enigma.
If the government knows about any sort of extraterrestrial life and they've been sitting on it and not letting the public know, why would they want to just, okay, we'll tell you now?
If, in other words, if they're keeping it secret, that must be a good reason.
Yeah, exactly.
It's secret. But now the question, I guess, also could you know, be asked as to whether or not the reasons that government would keep that secret are in the best interest of the civilian populace.
Right. Right. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, if disclosure happens, great. I don't see it happening anytime soon. If it does happen, I will not be surprised if it's just some sort of wavery. Inconclusive, well, we just can't really say, you know. But I don't know. I'm still wondering, why is SETI using radio waves to try to contact these aliens out in outer space?
Well, again, that should be evidence of the fact that maybe one of two things is going on. There are no aliens, A, or B, the aliens are utilizing a technology far more advanced than radio waves. Tyler Pittman.
The UFO enigma will continue to be an enigma as long as we frame it as UFO phenomenon. Disclosure. The best interest of the people is to consume. Why would we teach them anything of importance outside of consumerism?
It's the Manaha!
The Manaha.
Oh, God.
To be completely honest, I believe the event being held is a practice and something we as people who hold this subject dear to our hearts, we're not doing this for the fame and notoriety or for the paycheck it brings in. It is a passion, and we need to look at the gentlemen and gentle ladies that have allowed this disclosure hearing to go on as people who are passionate about it. I don't think money drives. I don't think money is the root of their passion. I feel, and I wouldn't even say corruption. I feel like there is something that some things you have to do in this world today in order to get the audience that you need, in order to catch the attention of those who may share that passion, but not yet have an avenue to express it or articulate it in.
Tyler, you know what I would say really quickly in that regard, and I mean this in all seriousness and in all reverence, what Stephen Bassett and the Paradigm Research Group and all those involved with the citizens hearing after, and we've looked at the good, we've looked at the bad over the course of this program. I hope everyone who's listened to this podcast has listened from the beginning all the way to the end, so they'll hear me say this now. It's brilliant what they've done because they have garnered public attention. The Huffington Post has been writing about this. The New York Daily News, a lot of different news sources.
It's bipartisan.
There's been bipartisan treatment of it.
Former Democratic presidential nominee, who I actually thought has some really interesting ideas.
Sure.
The fact that they even the money we're talking about is a lot of money to us, but it's still a piss in the pot of what Washington, D.C. lobbyists are spending each year.
Good point.
In order to propagate an aura of media digestion.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is alternative media, man. This is not something that the mainstream is putting forth. This is not a contemporary mainstream kind of conventional idea.
But with mainstream actors being people that have served as public servants in the United States.
Absolutely.
Congress, Senate, I'm not sure on that. Anyway, they're representatives of the people, even though they're no longer in office. What I ultimately take from this is grassroots campaigns, grassroots meaning people interested in things that genuinely move them, building up the capital it takes to draw mainstream attention to this and succeeding. They have succeeded in doing this event. The website looks great. We are talking about it tonight. We are interested in this subject. They are interested in the subject. Former representatives are at this event. It holds for the future a prosperous promise.
Well,
I'm excited about that. I know I was a little naysaying and everything, but it's been an interesting 2 hours.
Hold on, Tyler, let me say, I'd hope that anyone who listens to this program and listens to Caleb and Tyler and I and anyone else who ever is on this program, guests or field correspondents to the program, anybody. As a matter of fact, I'd hope to have a field correspondent there in Washington at very least if we couldn't be there. We weren't able to be there, and then I couldn't get our field correspondent in time for the program either. But the point is that I'd hope that anyone who listens to this show knows that with, you know, we may be lighthearted about it at times, and at times we may ask very hard questions, even of people who we enjoy, people who we respect, and people who we genuinely like. But the bigger question is, rather than just, you know, stroking egos and propping up, you know, personalities and more importantly, I think, making people feel good about the work that they, you know, feel is important to them. You know, we can look at people and we can engage in fan worship, you know, and all this kind of stuff as much as we want to, but that's not going to really further the cause. I don't know that there is absolutely any proof of extraterrestrial interactions with humankind or extraterrestrial visitation.
Subterraneans.
I couldn't show you any proof that E.T. has visited planet Earth. But I think the kinds of questions that are going on in Washington this week are at very least the kinds of questions that should be asked. And if nothing else, it's a good start. And I think that, you know, I think a lot of the people that we have up there right now who are asking those questions are, you know, they're good people. They're very good people.
And it's really, it illustrates the point. These people have written books. They've sold books. These books are on my shelf. The Late Strikers on my shelf.
Right.
These are people who are interested, genuinely interested. They may have made a living out of it, but they're out for the truth. And they've got real people with power or who have been in power positions listening. And these authors, you know, this comes to show even the work Micah, my colleague, my mentor, is doing. And I look forward to future discussions.
Well, let's hope it's the beginning of a long discussion we're going to have about the serious interest in UFOs, UAP, and yes, maybe even the potential for extraterrestrial visitation here on planet Earth. And that's going to have to wrap it up. You know, while we no longer can say maybe that this is not a mainstream issue, hopefully after this weekend it will be, we also can't say that there's proof positive. But we'll continue to ask those difficult questions on behalf of Caleb Hanks, Tyler Pittman, Matt Oakley, Dick Oakley, and of course, John Anderson, the mouth of the mountains. I am the mouth of the South, Micah Hanks, and this is the Graylian Report. On behalf of all of us here at Graylian International, keep asking those questions, and you can ask us questions each week. info@graylianreport.com if you'd like to interact with us directly. We're signing off for now from the Graylian Bunker. As always, my friends, be well and stay strange out there. We'll talk to you again very soon.
Been listening to the Graylian Report with Micah Hanks. Any rebroadcast or duplication of this program or program content without express written permission is strictly prohibited. The Graylian Report, in direct cooperation with the internet website graylianreport.com.